Storm Dante leaves parts of Luzon flooded. We'll get an update on the situation in Pampanga from our correspondent on the ground, as well as the overall damage caused by Dante from the NDRRMC. No power outages scheduled for Luzon today. Senate Committee on Energy Chair Senator Sherwin Gatchalian joins us later on in the program for a discussion on the Luzon power shortage. Manila Mayor Isko Moreno urges government to drop the face shield mandate. And the Philippines set to begin its real-world study on the effect of COVID-19 vaccines this month. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We begin with an update on Tropical Storm Dante. Most storm signals have been lifted this morning, but Dante continues to bring moderate to heavy rains over parts of Luzon. In Pampanga, the storm left several areas flooded. ABS-CBN's Gracie Rutao now joins us for an update. Gracie, looks like the sun is out. Tell us more about that.
Yes, Carmina, looks like we're going to have a good day here in Pampanga since the tropical cyclone wind signal was lifted here in Pampanga, but Tropical Storm Dante left some areas underwater. In Makabebe Town, people walk on water as roads in Barangay Santa Maria are flooded due to heavy rain. In the town proper, the unpaved road due to ongoing upgrade becomes unsuitable and unfit for movement as it becomes muddy due to overnight rains. There are also reports of scattered flooding in nearby town of Masantol. Authorities say these towns in the 4th District are really prone to flooding even with little rain because of their geographical characteristic, since sea level are rising. The water is expected to persist for at least several days to weeks in these low-lying areas since water here recedes at a very slow pace that needs to flow downstream towards the Manila Bay. That's the latest here in Pampanga. Back to you.
Yes, Gracie, let's talk about those areas that have been, you know, always flooded every time a storm passes your area. But what can you tell us about how fast these floodwaters subside through the years, and also the amount of water that goes into these areas? Have you noticed any difference since you've been covering these areas these past years, Gracie?
Yes, Carmina. Authorities admitted that even with little rain, these low-lying areas in the province are having this scattered flooding. It is because of their area, which is below sea level. And it is also due to the extraction in the ground. But the provincial government said they already have a long-term solution to this perennial problem in Pampanga. It is the Third River Project, which is expected to drain the three major tributaries of water here in Pampanga. And then eventually, Pampanga will be out of water.
Wow, Pampanga flood-free. That remains to be seen. Looking forward to that. Our correspondent, Gracie Rutao, there joining us via Zoom. Keep safe, Gracie. Take care. All right. The Department of Public Works and Highways pegs the initial cost of damage to infrastructure left behind by Dante at 286 million pesos. Moving on, all storm warning signals in several areas are lifted as Tropical Storm Dante continues to move northwest. Let's get the latest now from Pag-asa weather forecaster Ariel Rojas. Ariel, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. Tropical Storm Dante continues to move farther away from land, and that's the reason why we have lifted Tropical Cyclone Wind Signals number 2 and 1 in some parts of Pangasinan, Zambales, and Tarlac. At 10 a.m., the center of Tropical Storm Dante was located some 205 kilometers west-northwest of Dagupan City, or 190 kilometers west-southwest of Sinait. That's over the west Philippine Sea, west of Ilocos region. It continues to pack winds of up to 65 kilometers per hour near its center, with gusts reaching up to 90 kilometers per hour. It is fast moving at 35 kilometers per hour, and it is headed northwestward. It is, Dante is expected to further weaken into a tropical depression within the next 24 hours, maybe less, and further into a low pressure area by the time it is headed towards the northern boundary of the Philippine area of responsibility. Light to moderate rains will continue to be experienced over the western part of the zone, specifically over some parts of Ilocos region, central Luzon, and even here in Calabarzon and Mimaropa areas. Gale warning is currently in effect over the northern and western seaboards of northern Luzon, and sea travel is not advised for small sea crafts over these waters. That's the latest from Pagasa. This is Ariel Rojas. Good afternoon.
Thanks, Ariel, to you and the rest of the team there. Keep safe. Take care. And let's get an update now on the damage caused by Tropical Storm Dante. We're now joined by Mark Timbad. He's, of course, the spokesperson of the National Disaster Risk Reduction and Management. Mark, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Ms. Carmina. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's talk about the latest figures. Let's begin with people, the number of people affected by Typhoon or the Tropical Storm Dante.
Thank you, Ms. Carmina. The NDRMC continues to have its monitoring activities in the regions that have been affected by Tropical Storm Dante. So far, we have received a report that we have 9,831 families that had been affected by the storm, and we were able to evacuate 280 families from Regions 5 and Region 7. As of this hour, we have published an update in the count of casualties, although this remains for validation, and some operations, search and rescue operations, are still continuing. We have four people who have been reported as dead, two coming from Region 11, and another two coming from Region 12. Now, we have two injured persons coming from Region 11, and seven missing persons, four coming from Region 6. These are the missing fishermen. Number two, we also have two Region 8 missing persons and one Region 11 missing person. So that brings the casualties, four dead, two injured, and seven missing. For damages to agriculture, we received information from our counterparts in Region 12 and Caraga that they have computed an estimate of 14,603,719 pesos worth of damages to rice and corn crops coming from their regions. And in Region 11, they have reported six damaged houses due to Tropical Storm Dante. We also received information of two roads and three bridges that have been reported unpassable due to precautionary measures implemented by the local government to prevent accidents.
All right. Okay, so the damage to agriculture, that's not complete yet, right? When are you going to get the full picture here?
The ongoing, the assessment continues, so we're expecting that within a day or two, the regions would be reporting this their estimates now of the damages to agriculture, including livestock and fisheries.
Okay. You have evacuated 280 families. They're currently in evacuation centers. How many evacuation centers are we looking at here?
In various regions, they have evacuation centers amounting to... Let me, just a moment, Ms. Carmina. The evacuated population are staying in 104 evacuation centers across the different regions, Region 11, 12, and Caraga.
Can you tell us more about the state of these evacuation centers and the state of the evacuees, considering that we are in the middle of a pandemic, Mark?
One of the main items that our local disaster managers are giving attention to is to ensure that the evacuated population would be protected still from COVID-19. Part of that is the monitoring of the health situations in the evacuation centers. If they notice that anyone is exhibiting symptoms of possible COVID-19 disease, these persons are then isolated and brought to the nearest quarantine facility or a medical facility depending on their actual condition. Even in the process of evacuating the population, the evacuating personnel are examining the health condition, checking if they have fever, etc., so that those people who are not sick or those people who are sick will not be included in, or will not be allowed to join the regular or the general healthy population staying in the evacuation centers. This will be sent to the quarantine facilities and the medical facilities that attend to COVID-19 cases.
Is there also a guideline coming from the NDRRMC as to how many people should be housed in a single evacuation center? Because right now we're looking at 104 evacuation centers for 280 families. Is that the normal ratio, or did you have to stretch the number of evacuation centers precisely so you can meet the health protocols for COVID-19?
Before that, Ms. Carmina, let me give you an adjusted count, because I received a notice here that from 200 families, we have now 3,090 families staying in 104 evacuation centers. With regard to the count of occupants in an evacuation center, leave that to the local government to determine, because part of the preparations is to, number one, identify all facilities that can be used as evacuation centers, and then establish a count of persons that can only be accommodated. So that, for example, one facility can only house 300 while observing physical distancing. Other evacuees that cannot be accommodated will be sent or will be directed to another facility inside the municipality.
Okay, and based on the figures that you're getting and the reports that you're getting from the ground, what is the assessment of the NDRRMC? How soon before these affected residents can go back to their homes and return to normalcy?
Go ahead. Some locations, some municipalities are already experiencing improvements in the weather. So we're expecting that a lot of these evacuated populations will be allowed to return to their homes within a day or two, or even today. And this will be reported to us by our counterparts in the regional councils soon. Mm.
All right. Final question. And I don't know if this kind of info also goes to you guys, but what about the vaccine situation? Were there any reports of spoilage, wastage because of the storm that passed?
On the part of NDRMC, we have not received any report yet of problems when it comes to the storage facilities of our vaccines. However, part of the contingency plan in the preparation and securing of those storage facilities is to ensure that, number one, they will be unaffected in case of power interruptions, and that these storage facilities are safe against floods and would not easily lose power in cases of power outages.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. And the RRMC spokesperson, Mark Timbal, always a pleasure talking to you. Take care, keep safe.
Thank you palagi.
Salamat kayo din po.
Thank you po.
All right, moving on. The Philippine Volcanology Institute warns of lahar flow, or muddy runoff near rivers and drainages surrounding Taal Volcano and Mount Pinatubo. And that's due to the heavy rains brought about by Tropical Storm Dante. Pyroclastic flow deposits from the 1991 eruption remain on a watershed near Mount Pinatubo. Meanwhile, thin ash remnants from the most recent January 2020 eruption are still evident on the slopes near Taal Lake.
Kung sakaling sobra-sobra ang ulan at doon talaga binubuhos yung tubig, kailangan ding paghandaan in the long term yung mga ganong senaryo na baka magkaroon din ng mas malalaking lahar at umapaw sa ilog. So, importante, yung mga ilog dyan sa Pinatubo ay nadedreds para makulong yung agos ng tubig sa loob lamang ng mga dike or ilog.
The The Philippines recorded 5,257 new COVID-19 cases Wednesday. This brings the total number of active cases in the country to over 52,000. 146 additional deaths were recorded, while 6,000 more patients recovered. Data from the Okta Research Group shows from May 26th to June 1st, the average number of COVID-19 cases in the country increased by 37% from the week prior. Because of this, an infectious disease expert expressed concern over government's move to allow leisure travel from the so-called NCR Plus to areas under the least restrictive quarantine classification.
If you move more people from a GCQ area to a lower number of area with cases, pwede mangyari na those people who are there, nanggaling dito, can be transmitting the infection to this area. So sa akin naman, since this is a policy that to slowly open up the economy and normalize our natin dito, yung mobility natin, normal life, sa akin, we have to make it like gradual siguro, no? Like, why not ikabit doon yung may bakuna? Di ba? So, ang suggestion ko dyan is, dapat, bago ka pupunta, hindi lang negative RT-PCR, at least nabakunahan ka na.
The increase in COVID-19 cases in Mindanao has now outpaced that of the national capital regions. That's according to the director of the Health Department's Epidemiology Bureau, Aditea De Guzman. De Guzman also says provinces in Luzon that are outside Metro Manila and its surrounding areas have also outpaced the NCR Plus. Regions 3 and 4 have recorded the fastest rise in infections, but De Guzman notes the NCR Plus area is also seeing a slight upward trend, while the Visayas is seeing a gradual increase. Another region seeing a rise in COVID-19 cases, Eastern Visayas. The health department says 258 cases were recorded Wednesday. That's the highest so far this year. 4 samples also tested positive for the variant first detected in the UK. The Eastern Visayas has recorded a total of 21,176 cases, including 324 deaths. The governor of Southern Leyte now appealing for additional vaccine supplies amid this alarming spike.
Nag-request kami ng additional na allocation ng vaccine para if possible, marami mabaksina natin kagad yung mga tao namin dito sa Southern Leyte. Sa amin, allocation namin is 2,000 per week. Masyadong konti lang pag 2,000 per week.
Manila City Mayor Isko Moreno wants to do away with face shields. During a meeting with other Metro Manila mayors, Moreno appealed to the interagency task force to consider dropping face shields as a form of protection from COVID-19. He says face shields only contribute to unnecessary costs and environmental waste.
Ayon na lang yata sa buong mundo ang gumagamit ng face shield sa general population. Wherein, dapat yung face shield gamitin na lamang kapag pupunta ka ng ospital o nagtatrabaho ka ng ospital. I'm not saying i-stop na natin ngayon, but it has to be revisited if we really care for our people.
Quezon City began scheduling workers under the so-called A4 priority list for vaccination. The city's vaccination task force says employers can register their workers for their jabs by booking them online through Easy Consult. Workers can also register with village officials. Large companies can submit a master list of employees to protectodo.ph.
Pero ina-avoid talaga namin yung walk-in dahil ang nangyari, nung una kaming nagbukas ng vaccine site sa Quezon City, no, naghintay yung mga tao na mga 3 to 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And nag-usap kami ni Mayor, sabi ni Mayor, I don't want that happening to our citizens. So ang gusto namin, organized at maximum sana, less than an hour, dapat tapos na yung tao.
Over in Manila, Mayor Isko Moreno says they are still waiting for instructions on when to start vaccinating those in the A4 priority list. Moreno says all workers on that list will be vaccinated, whether in the formal or informal sectors.
ID lang ipapakita mo. Tusok dito, tusok. Wala masyadong cheche-bureche. Kasi gusto na ng tao ng ano eh, ng bakuna eh. Magkatiwalaan natin ng tao na siya ay nagsasabi ng totoo. Siya ay empleyado, bakunahan natin. Whether kayo'y empleyado na taga Maynila o empleyadong hindi taga Maynila, welcome kayo sa Maynila. What is important is we don't violate the priority listing.
The Philippine Department of Science and Technology set to begin its study on the effectiveness of COVID-19 vaccines in the real-world setting. This will involve monitoring fully vaccinated individuals for a year. Dr. Nina Berba says the first phase will be conducted over the next 2 weeks, starting with medical frontliners at the Philippine General Hospital. The next phases will focus on bigger communities across the different regions. This study will also take into consideration the presence of the newer COVID-19 variants.
We have now the clinical surveillance arm, so we will be able to detect people who will have COVID-19 despite having been vaccinated. So what we will do is we will actually get their samples of nasopharyngeal swab samples and send them to the Philippine Genome Center and see and characterize the virus that actually affected them, whether they belong to the variant kinds of SARS-CoV-2.
Russia sending more COVID-19 vaccines to the Philippines, Malacanang says. Russian President Vladimir Putin made that promise during a phone call with Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte Wednesday. That conversation took place as the two countries marked 45 years of bilateral relations. Manila has so far procured at least 80,000 doses of the Russian vaccine Sputnik V. Meanwhile, the U.S. says its plan to distribute vaccines globally will be done according to need and not in exchange of any political favor. That reiteration coming from U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman, who is currently in Bangkok for the second leg of her diplomatic tour. The U.S. President Joe Biden has committed to give away 80 million doses to the global vaccine sharing facility COVAX. The Philippines is set to receive some, but the number of doses has yet to be confirmed. Washington says the distribution plan could be announced by Thursday. Pots banged in several cities in Brazil as protests erupted once more over President Jair Bolsonaro's handling of the pandemic. Bolsonaro addressed the nation Wednesday evening, laying out some of his government's recent accomplishments. He also pledged strong economic growth going forward, but presented no new information. The right-wing leader's popularity has been declining amid persistently high daily COVID-19 deaths and cases. On Wednesday alone, almost 100,000 Brazilians came down with the coronavirus and over 2,500 died. The pandemic has pushed 100 million more workers into poverty. That's according to a new report from the UN's International Labor Organization. It also warns the job market crisis created by the pandemic is far from over. The ILO says global unemployment is expected to stand at 205 million in 2022. That's far higher than the 187 million in 2019. It adds employment is not expected to bounce back to pre-pandemic levels until 2023, and the recovery would be uneven.
We expect the employment situation will be worse in low-income countries. High-income countries will close the gaps the fastest thanks to their better access to vaccines and their strong fiscal policy support. The report also details the way that this crisis is making long-standing labor market inequalities and decent work deficits worse. For many millions of people, the working hour losses, combined with a lack or absence of social protection, have simply meant an increase in poverty.
We are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. The National Grid Corporation of the Philippines says there will be no power interruptions in Luzon today. According to the NGCP spokesperson, Attorney Cynthia Alabanza, there's no need to implement manual load dropping after one power plant went online today. The cool weather brought about by Tropical Storm Dante also helped stabilize the situation.
Right now po, stable tayo. Sapat po ang supply at matutugunan niya yung nakikita nating demand. Pwera na lang po kung meron pang additional na planta na mag-offline na hindi po inaasahan.
Meanwhile, the Energy Department is studying the possibility of filing charges against certain power suppliers for economic sabotage. Undersecretary Felix Fuentebella said power suppliers that may have carried out preventive maintenance during the months of April, May, and June violated the agency's rules. Well, for more on Luzon's power woes, we're now joined by the chair of the Senate Committee on Energy, Senator Sherwin Gatchalian. Senator, nice to see you again. Welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right, so we just heard from the NGCP. They said, it's okay, we're stable for today, but is this how it's going to be? We're just going to rely on good weather conditions, pray that no power plant will go offline today. Is this how things are going to be, Senator?
It's quite sad that we're relying on nature to give us power and to make sure that we have continuous electricity. And we're relying on good weather, actually, to have continuous supply of electricity. This should not be the case. The Department of Energy should improve their forecasting, should implement their rules, and should make sure that investors are investing in new power. These are the three things that they need to do immediately. The power sector, Carmina, is a long-term business. It's a long-term industry. And we have to make sure that the plants are being built now for the requirement in the next 4 to 5 years. And that's how long we should be planning. So in other words, we have to plan better. Mm-hmm. And we have to execute those plans by making sure that investors are investing in new capacity.
Well, Senator, you've been conducting an inquiry into the energy situation of the country. Tell us what you know about what is wrong with the system, that we still have not broken the cycle of resorting to rotational brownouts.
Okay. I'll make this very, very simple, Carmina. This is the industry is quite technical, but I'll make it very simple. Number one is our economy is growing, meaning we will need new sources of power and new power in the next few years. And we need to keep on investing. And the good thing is a lot of investors are willing to come here and build power plants. They're willing to invest. That's good for us. But we have to make it easier for them. And we have to help them navigate through the red tape and the bureaucracy within the government system. To build a power plant takes just to build a power plant takes about 4 years. And to get your permit only takes about 1 year to 1.5 years. So just imagine... whether 1 year to 1.5 years just to get the permits and another few years to build the power plant. So it takes about 4 years to build the power plant. So meaning you really have to have long-term planning in order to make sure that you have power at a certain point in time in the future. And then the second thing is we have to impose the rules. No? I heard you earlier that the Department of Energy is planning to conduct an investigation and possibly sue those who didn't follow the rules. You have to do that on a constant basis, not because there's a brownout, not because we're now under a state of brownout, but if somebody will not follow the rule, with or without brownout, you have to penalize them because that's how they will be disciplined and that's how the players will improve their operation.
Mm. But what about holding the NGCP accountable as well? Aren't they mandated to make sure that there are enough ancillary services available? But that's not happening.
That's also one of the things that connected to implementing the rules. Because when they say implementing the rules, all of the players are mandated to follow the rules. The GenCos, they need to follow the rules, meaning they have to make sure that their plants are in tip-top condition, invest in spare parts, invest in maintenance. Number two, NGCP should contract reserves. And there's a hierarchy of reserves that they have to contract. And this is also under the rules. Even this is distributors such as Maralco, they have to follow their maintenance procedure. So all of these actors have certain rules to follow and they have to be penalized. For example, if NGCP is not following the rules, then they have to be penalized. But they will only follow if you impose and discipline the players. If they know that they can get away with it, then nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, but this has been the situation, and then the pandemic hit. Is it true that some of these power plants that that went offline couldn't go online only because they were waiting or they're having a hard time securing visas for technicians who are foreigners, and they're having a hard time getting them here in the country to fix their power plants?
We heard those reasons, for example, the big spare parts, because they get caught in the customs or they're professionals or experts, they get caught in the quarantine protocols, as also visas. These are the things where government interventions would come in and give the power sector the priority. This is where DOE will come in, because DOE is the alter ego of the president. So meaning they have the power to help the GenCos and the power players to navigate through the intricacies of our permits and also our all of these necessary documents. So in other words, when we see a problem, we have to do the extra mile to help them. And this is what I've seen, because when I talk to the GenCos, because of this issue. And the same problem, actually, that we have seen in the past and we have seen in the last few months still persists right now. And they need a helping hand to push their maintenance as quick as possible.
As many players are there as there are in the power sector, shouldn't it fall on the DOE to dictate the cadence? Did the DOE, I'm gonna cut to the chase here. Did the DOE drop the ball on this one, Senator?
Yes, definitely. And that's why last April when we conducted the hearing, because we already saw in the forecast that the reserves or the margin, they call it the operating margin, is quite narrow. And not only me, no, but the other senators were also worried about that very thin margin. That's why we conducted the hearing last April to get an assurance from the DOE if we will have a constant supply of electricity. And true enough, they assured the Senate that there will be no problem. They assured the Senate that everything's covered. That's why everything was, all of us were caught off guard when this brownout happened. And they did drop the ball. And the important thing now, Carmina, is to find a solution. You know? This will persist in the next few months. This will happen again next summer. And we're here to find a solution, and we're here to help DOE come up with laws that will empower them. If they need more powers to make sure that this will not happen again, then let's do it.
Okay, so this can be one of the things that you're looking into, because according to Business Mirror's Pete Maniego, the problem on the lack of ancillary services providers is that the NGCP will only sign a contract with existing power plants that meet their specifications. But the company, Senator, will seldom venture into constructing a power plant without a firm contract. How true is this? Because I've heard that the NGCP insists on entering into non-firm contracts. Which power plant will do that?
This is a very technical issue, Carmina, but I'll simplify it. NGCP needs to enter into a contract that will assure us consumers of reserves. And just to make it less technical, whenever a plant goes down, there must be a reserve ready and standby for it to operate. But obviously, it didn't happen. No? Right now, we're experiencing brownout. So that means that the reserves are absent. And that's why I said earlier that the rules should be applied equally to all the players, including NGCP. And if NGCP is found negligent, then they should be penalized. And that's part of their contract. That's part of the contract that they entered with the Filipino people, because we're the customers of all we're the customers of electricity, and that's a contract they entered with us. So, in other words, DOE should already investigate this, and it's found, then we have to penalize already all of the different power players involved in this issue.
Okay, so earlier, Senator, you were talking about solutions. I want to get into that because we don't want to be part of this cycle any longer, right? So you've been chair of the committee since 2019. Let's talk about policies. What national policy should be there so that the private sector can come in and build what's necessary, Senator?
When we conducted a hearing, actually several hearings, and even consulted with the investors, because we are in a deregulated environment, meaning the power plants are all built by the private sector. Therefore, the private sector is the one who will put up the power plants. And I asked them, what do you need? Mm. They said, I have the money. All we need is help us with the red tape, help us with the bureaucracy, make our lives easier in terms of building a power plant. Then we enacted what we call the Energy Virtual One-Stop Shop, the EVOS law. This was enacted a few years ago. And virtually, this law gives a lot of power to the DOE to cut the red tape. So meaning, DOE has the power to reduce the red tape. In fact, we even vested them with other powers of other agencies so they can do it with DOE. This law is partially implemented. In fact, it's not being fully implemented. That's why our power sector is not filling it to the fullest. The other law that the Senate implemented is the ease of doing business law. So outside of this one-stop shop law, there's another bigger law that will cut the red tape. Again, the agencies need to implement this to the fullest in order to reduce the number of processes when you apply for to build a power plant.
Hmm. Now, finally, I want to talk about renewables. What is the place of renewables in terms of building these new power plants, making sure that there's enough reserve so that we break out of this cycle, Senator?
Renewables is the future. That will be the fuel and the source of electricity for the future. But, of course, it's more complex to build than people think. You know? Because, for example, solar, you need hectares and hectares of land. And if you need hectares and hectares of land, you need to convert it, and meaning the document that comes with it is very complex. So again, we go back to the issue of red tape. In fact, Carmina, the issue is not technology, it's not capital, it's not investor, it's red tape, which is all in the hands of the government. That's why we made two laws precisely to address that red tape issue, but it's now up to the DOE and the other agencies to implement that to make the lives of our investors much simpler.
Mm. And what have you heard from the DOE? Knowing what you know, telling them what you know, telling them what you think. Have you gotten any assurance?
Well, through the hearings, and the hearings will speak for itself, we've been conducting a lot of hearings, we've been advising them. Even the Energy Regulatory Commission, the ERC, which is the regulator, and the ERC has the power to penalize, we've been advising them. And it's a constant interaction with them to make sure that the system is running smooth and running properly. But obviously, there's still a lot of things to be done.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Hopefully, the next time we talk, we got to talk about good news. Senator Sherwin Gatchalian there, Chairman of the Senate Energy Committee. A pleasure talking to you. Take care and keep safe.
Carmina, thank you.
Right, from there, we're going to go to another break. Up ahead, the latest on the NBA playoffs and the mastermind behind K-pop sensation BTS debuts on Forbes Korea's Rich List. Here on Dateline Philippines, stay with us here on ANC.
And engineers are constantly finding solutions that help ease the way we live life within our homes. One of the ways they do this is through accelerating digital transformation for a safer and more convenient customer service experience and trade. Union Bank aims to shine the spotlight on these innovations, as well as give young talents a space to enhance their skills with the Innovation Campus.
The Innovation Hub would house various talents, and it would be a ground for actually promoting digital transformation and taking up many industries.
It will also accommodate the collaboration and co-creation activities that we like to conduct with our customers and partners.
The campus's grounds in San Pedro Laguna is currently aiming for a gold certification in Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, or LEED. By ensuring that the establishment will be smart, ergonomically designed, and most importantly, green. The Union Bank Innovation Campus is committed to bringing out the country's potential of being an artificial intelligence hub.
We recently partnered with Global Learning Solutions to put up the Asian Institute of Digital Transformation. And we've already started our first cohort of training participants from various industries.
We don't want to innovate by ourselves. That's why we're creating this campus, so we can have people go in there and really co-create with us and innovate with us.
The training ground will soon create more opportunities for digital transformation in the country.
Magandang gabi, bayan.
Stay updated with the daily issues and current events.
Tulad po ng aming pinangako, nagbabalik ang ating TV Patrol
with the Philippines' leading local evening newscast. The national stories presented to you by the country's trusted anchors and reporters. TV Patrol. Watch it weeknights here on the ABS-CBN News Channel.
Still with Dateline Philippines, here's another look at our headlines this noon. Tropical storm Dante leaves parts of Luzon flooded. Over 3,000 families are staying in evacuation centers where authorities say health protocols are being followed. No power outages scheduled for Luzon today. Senate Energy Committee Chairman Sherwin Gatchalian says the Energy Department must also look into the National Grid Corporation for any liability in recent blackouts. Manila Mayor Isko Moreno urging government to drop the face shield mandate. And the Philippines set to begin its real-world study on the effect of COVID-19 vaccines this month. Back with more news, the police officer behind the killing of an elderly woman in Quezon City now facing charges of murder and grave misconduct. But Police Chief Guillermo Eliazar says they will follow due process before dismissing the suspect. That's Master Sergeant Hensi Zidampan. The PNP's investigation is expected to take 3 to 4 weeks. Zidampan shot dead 52-year-old Lilibeth Valdez Monday night. The police officer had a previous squabble with the victim's family.
The firearms and badges, na-confiscate na natin yan. But the result of investigation right now, hindi pa siya tanggal sa serbisyo. Pero tayong due process at ayaw natin i-shortcut yan dahil baka eventually, kagaya ng ibang mga few cases, nababaligtad because of this technicality. So, I don't want to preempt. Otherwise, bakit pa natin i-investigahin yan? Pero sinasabi natin, based on evidence, tingnan natin kung ano maging resulta ng investigation.
It's the latest senseless killing involving policemen, and Eliazar vows to cleanse the police force.
Hindi ko ipagtatanggol at hindi ako mag-attempt ipagtanggol yung mga animal ng mga pulis na yan. Ang gusto ko lang sana ipagtanggol yung more than 220,000 natitira na iba na wala namang basihan para madamay dito. Pag wala ka ng kalokohan at talagang nakita natin na grabe yan, tanggalin, huwag tayong mag-hesitate. Alam mo, we have dismissed more than 5,000 since 2016. At sana nga, hindi na kailangan sana dumating dyan kung hindi lang kumaayos ang recruitment ng mga yan. In my assessment, at sa nakikita kong, well, yung kaya ko lang gawin, I should start from recruitment.
The Philippine Human Rights Commission wants Lilibeth Valdez's killing declared a human rights violation. CHR spokesperson Jacqueline Deguia says they welcome the PNP's filing of charges against Master Sergeant Hensi Dinampan. The CHR is also conducting its own probe into the killing. They also want to give financial assistance to the family of Valdez to encourage them to fight for justice.
This is a small amount, but the message that we wish to convey is that it is a recognition of the government that a wrong has been committed, and we want you to pursue justice. It's a very minimal amount, a maximum of 30,000, and it's more symbolical, we hope. It's supposed to send a message of encouragement.
Another incident of gun violence in the U.S. A 12-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl who ran away from a group home and found guns inside a house they broke into shot at police officers in Volusia County in Florida. The sheriff's office says the girl sustained life-threatening injuries but is now in stable condition. The boy was unhurt but is getting treatment for a medical condition unrelated to the incident. Charges against the children are still pending.
There are three firearms in the house, and there's about 200 rounds of ammunition in the house. So deputies begin to keep eyes on. They call for more resources. They announce their presence. And in fact, they know that we're out there. We're calling for any de-escalation tactic. They reached out to our juvenile justice coordinator to find out who they are. Could we get people on the phone to help us de-escalate? At one point, one of the sergeants got up to the window and threw their personal cell phone in and told them to answer the phone. We want to make contact with you. Nothing worked.
Back here at home, the House Committee on Labor and Employment has approved a bill instituting a national unemployment insurance program. That's as lawmakers seek to soften the pandemic's blow on the working class. When passed into law, it would offer unemployment benefits for a period of time while displaced workers look for new jobs, but they must sign an agreement to undertake job searches to be eligible for the benefits. Marikina Representative Stella Kimbo, the principal author of the measure, says this will protect workers from the risk of substantial income loss and consumption reduction. Fast food giant Jollibee temporarily closing down one of its branches in Bonifacio Global City following a viral post. See, a Facebook user claimed instead of enjoying Jollibee's signature deep fried chicken, she found a deep fried towel coated in breading. She ordered the fried chicken via delivery. Jollibee says its Bonifacio stopover branch will be shut down for 3 days as it undergoes a review of its food preparation procedures. It will also send out reminders to all stores to ensure they are strictly adhering to these procedures. In sports, the NBA's Eastern Conference top seed, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Atlanta Hawks, arrange a second-round showdown in the playoffs. The Sixers ousted the Washington Wizards by winning Game 5 of the series, 129-112. Philadelphia did it despite missing main man Joel Embiid, who was out with a meniscus tear. Seth Curry led the Sixers with 30 points. Over in New York, the Hawks dusted off the Knicks behind their star point guard Trae Young. The Knicks' defense was no match for the Hawks' high-octane offense. Atlanta won Game 5, 103-89, to bag the series 4-1. Young finished with 36 points and 9 assists. The Western Conference's top seed, the Utah Jazz, well, they're also through the conference semifinals. The Jazz dumped the Memphis Grizzlies 126-110. This game was virtually over after the first quarter, where the Jazz exploded for 47 points. After losing the series opener, the Jazz strung up 4 straight victories to clinch the best-of-7 affair. Utah will next face the winner of the Los Angeles Clippers-Dallas Mavericks matchup. The mastermind behind K-pop sensation BTS enters Forbes' list of 50 richest people in South Korea for the first time. This year's ranking saw Bang Si-jook debuting at number 16 with a net worth of $2.7 billion. Bang is the founder and CEO of HYBE, formerly known as Big Hit Entertainment. He became a billionaire after he took the company public in what is South Korea's largest IPO in 3 years. Last month, HYBE acquired Ithaca Holdings, which represents American pop stars Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines Podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.